Africa weekly report, and it's certainly been an interesting week. More protests in Sudan, chaos in Zimbabwe, elections in the DRC, and of course the upcoming elections in Nigeria, one of Africa's biggest countries. To touch on these stories, we've got Africa Report correspondent Chris Zimba, managing consultant at the Democracy Center in Zambia. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to speak once more to this platform, and greetings to our listeners.
Okay, Sudan, the troubles carry on. Protests, nobody wants Bashir to stay, but it seems like Bashir is going to stay.
Oh, yes. The president of Sudan is a man that has got a thick skin, because al-Bashir is one president, just like many African presidents, that has faced a serious political opposition for many years. And for him, you also need to know that he is one person who at some point was indicted by the International Criminal Court. And for many years, he has managed to escape the ladder of the International Criminal Court and remain the president. So he is one person who is politically stubborn. And I tend to think that the protests that are going on in Sudan, demanding for his resignation, I think may not have a direct and immediate impact in terms of making him to leave power and hand over to somebody. So I doubt that the president of Sudan, due to these protests, can be motivated to leave. However, we need to note that these protests have got an impact on him. Continuing the protest at some point will give birth maybe to some form of political violence, and at some point it could also lead to bloodshed. That in itself is going to mount a lot of pressure on him, because with time, even the regional bodies, the international community will begin to voice against him or against his government. And at some point, that can have a lot of political impact in terms of making him even to step down. And it has been done before in Africa. We saw the likes of Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. Those were seen to be untouchable, but due to protest, Mubarak was history. So even now, the same can also happen for Bashir in Sudan.
Indeed, and of course, nobody at the end of the day is ultimately untouchable. So would you say in the case of Sudan for al-Bashir, it's more a question of time than anything else?
Oh, yes. The same can be said in terms of his protest and the impact on the presidency. We do recognize that he is the president of the people of South Sudan. And if the people of South Sudan continue to resent him, reject him, denounce him, and physically protest on the street in a manner that will multiply and double the numbers, I can assure you that al-Bashir will have no choice but to resign. But it's very difficult for many African presidents, by the way, to make a decision of resigning based on street protests, unless numbers double or numbers multiply beyond what they expected, because at some point, even if the police and the military who have no choice in terms of either siding with the president, but will end up siding with the people. Once the people multiply on the street of Khartoum and double the numbers, I think that will scare al-Bashir and his men in uniform, and that can also lead to him resigning. And that's why I say that the same Mubarak in Egypt at some point, he ridiculed the protesters when they started during the revolution of 2011. But as days went by, the number kept on increasing, and at some point it became scary for him to remain in prison, because the majority of the people, or the many of his people he was presiding over, had denounced and rejected him. So al-Bashir, I think, has got a similar test, and we'll see what extent the protesters can remain resilient on the street and for how many days they can grow in number and multiply. That would be the main indicator whether he's going to resign or not.
Some people say that al-Bashir has played a very clever game internationally, that he has managed to curry the favor of a number of powerful countries, not least of all the United States of America and other powerful countries, by being very subservient when it comes to issues of a terror, for example.
You know, he knows that he is a man of many political issues and some political crimes, if I have to use the language of the International Criminal Court. But what he has done is to appease some superpowers. The United States, for example, are fighting terrorism in Africa. And there in the Sudan, across the Horn of Africa and the Middle East, the eastern side of Africa, simply playing a key role in terms of providing support to the American government. So that in itself makes Americans look at al-Bashir as an ally in the fight against terrorism. And that in itself gives him some form of a warm comfort under the armpits of the most in the world. So in as much as its actions and its conduct have violated human rights and democracy, the good news is that he has managed to secure a partnership with the superpower of this global community, and that is the United States of America, by joining them to fight the Al-Shabaab and other terrorist organizations around East Africa and in the neighboring countries. So at some point, they see him as an ally. He's not a total enemy. At his departure, they tend to raise fears on their side that Sudan may fall apart, just like Libya, and that in itself can multiply the number of terrorist organizations terrorizing both Africa, Asia, Europe, and North America. So at some point, I think it's a better evil for them, because the lessons of Libya are still very strong and traumatizing the Americans after the fall of Gaddafi. And if they fall of another man, the likes of al-Bashir, may, I think, worsen the situation both for the North American people and Europe, as well as Africa and Asia.
Chris Zimba, we're going to cut away for our headline news. Chris Zimba, Democracy Center in Zambia. He'll stay online, and after that, we're going to carry on with Africa Report. We'll have a look at Zimbabwe, DRC, and Nigeria.
Coming up in your bulletin at 5, new rules on political party funding could help fight corruption. The IEC hopes to add at least 1 million additional names to the voters' roll during this weekend's nationwide registration drive. And Britain's Labour leader says Theresa May is in denial over Brexit. Those are your headlines. More news at 5.
In Drive Time.
And welcome back to the Africa Report, your regular weekly program on Drive Time. Our special guest, Chris Zimba, Democracy Center in Zambia. Chris, let's have a look at the situation in Zimbabwe, just almost down the road from you, as it were. Absolutely crazy. President Mnangagwa goes out of the country to Davos, and before he goes, he more than doubles the price of fuel, 50 rand plus minus a litre, and all hell breaks loose while he's away from the country. Tell us more.
Oh, yes. President Mnangagwa made a terrible political mistake. The gesture he made was that of political cowardice, because there was nowhere a president can double or triple the price of energy fuel on the very day he leaves the country. And behind him, people begin to protest. All hell go loose. There are protests on the streets. The men in uniform, the police and the soldiers begin to shoot and to kill some of the protesters. So I think it was a terrible gesture from his political leadership that he was able to leave his own citizens and borders on fire, and he flew away to Russia like for holiday, or Europe, while he was visiting other countries. So it was very unfortunate that he did that. But suffice to mention that the people of Zimbabwe seem to be resolute in terms of what they want. They want President Mnangagwa to reduce or to reverse that decision of increasing the price for fuel, because by the end of the day, it's them who feel the pinch directly. President Mnangagwa and other politicians around the Zimbabwean government do not feel the pinch of an increment in the fuel price, because whatever they do and all their movements and their flights, scattered for by the state. So they use taxpayers' money. But an ordinary citizen in Zimbabwe is lamenting, and I think their demonstrations seem to be yielding results. It's unfortunate that some people died during the demonstrations. The Zimbabwean police and army, they acted brutal once more and shot some of the innocents and unarmed citizens during the protests. Very unfortunate, but the message is very clear that the people of Zimbabwe are not giving up. They want President Mnangagwa to reverse that decision. They want him to put his house in order, the country back to its economic positive line. So far, I don't think President Mnangagwa has done a good homework. He made a lot of promises after the fall of Robert Mugabe. He raised a lot of hope to the people of Zimbabwe, but it seems very clear that the gesture on the fuel price increment is contrary to what he promised them, and very contrary to what they voted him for. That in itself, I think, is a political battle. It is a political war, in fact, between the president himself and his subjects or his voters. And from the look of things, they seem not to be giving up until he provides leadership to help them resolve their social and economic status in that country.
There's a lot of disappointment in Zimbabwe, as a Zimbabwean friend told me the other day, that a crocodile never changes his teeth. In the same way a leopard never changes his spots, a crocodile doesn't change his teeth. And Mnangagwa was, after all, a Mugabe man.
Oh, yes. Yes, no doubt about it. By voting for President Mnangagwa, the people in Zimbabwe were not making any practical regime change. There was a continuation of the ZANU-PF in a different attire. The difference between Robert Mugabe and the President Mnangagwa, I don't think does exist. These are based on the same feathers. They are groomed under the same guerrilla wars and training. They served under the same government, the ZANU-PF government, for many years. So the crocodile that existed during the Mugabe era is the same crocodile that is existing and governing now under his own era. So it is, I think, a ramification or a price the people of Zimbabwe are paying for voting ZANU-PF and voting Project Mnangagwa. But also, it also explains as to the reason why there was sharp resentment and the protest when President Mnangagwa was announced to be the winner as opposed to Nelson Chamisa. It simply means that there was a bigger number of the people of Zimbabwe that wanted political and regime change. And that change, they were seeing it in Nelson Chamisa as opposed to President Mnangagwa. Hence the protest and the resentment that we saw when he was announced winner.
And let's quickly get on to the DRC. Martin Fayulu has lost his case. The DRC court has ruled. So Felix Tshisekedi is now the new Congolese president.
Yes, it is quite sad for the people of DRC Congo to learn that the constitutional court confirmed the big political victory of President Felix Tshisekedi, and that Martin Fayulu is no longer going to be considered ever for a government of national unity or any other political role. I think it's unfortunate because the court has not resolved the political puzzle and problem for the people of DRC Congo. What the court has done is to weaken it. It has just added salt on the political wound. What the court, I think, could have done is to also listen to other key stakeholders and players, both in the DRC Congo itself and within also the region and the international community. We do understand that the African Union, 3 days before the court made that ruling, did make a resolution to send a delegation of head of state that was supposed to be spearheaded by the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, who is the African Union chairperson. And they wanted to ensure that if the court didn't announce that they bring the key allies and parties together and begin to engage them in some form of a political negotiation as well as compromise. And I think to me, what would have been the best outcome is a government of national unity between Felix Tshisekedi and Martin Fayulu. The challenge now we have is that Martin Fayulu and his people are not going to recognize Felix Tshisekedi as a president. Martin has denounced the declaration by the court. He has called for his people to take up to the streets in a peaceful manner. But you know, in Africa, the so-called peaceful demonstrations on many occasions tend to turn sour and violent due to the brutality by the police or the military. So I see some form of practically a cold war emerging in the DRC Congo that may turn out at some point into a civil war if not well handled. So it's very unfortunate, in as much as the Felix Tshisekedi was confirmed by the court, there is internal rejection from those that think that the elections were not conducted in a manner that is free, credible, and fair, and much more. The resentment that is coming from Martin Fayulu and his coalition members, I think it belongs to a very huge population of the people of Congo to the extent that we cannot undermine it or ignore it. So I think it would also be important for Felix, as somebody has been confirmed as the president now, to begin to open the door to negotiate with Martin and his coalition camp. And I think in that way, maybe we may see political stability and peace to start reigning on the DRC Congo. But as things stand, I can assure you it's very difficult. Though other countries have already started congratulating Felix Tshisekedi as a president, such as Kenya and even South Africa, while you are there, they have already congratulated Felix Tshisekedi as a president, meaning that they are trying to bury the chapter and close the chapter for Martin Fayulu to have a negotiation point with his ally or his political rival in this case.
Chris Simba, our Africa analyst, thanks for chatting to us. We'll have to deal with Nigeria and President Ramaphosa and Zimbabwean sanctions next week. But Chris, until next week, everything of the best.
Thank you so much. It's always my pleasure to be here.
The Weekly African Report in Drive Time.